We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Move over, boys. It's time for She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome into She's on the Mic on Sports Radio 810. I'm your host, Bethany Bowman. Tonight, we're going to talk a wide range of topics. We're going to talk Chiefs and Patriots coming up this Sunday and some Royals news. The Patriots coming off of a win over the Steelers, the Chiefs off of a loss to the Buffalo Bills. I have two Patriots insiders joining us this evening that will help us preview the big game this Sunday. Of course, Joel Goldberg, Royals broadcaster, with us tonight for Royals news. A lot of new signings coming in over the last couple of days. But first, super excited to be joined here now by Patriots team reporter Tamara Brown. Thank you so much, Tamara, for joining us here. Excited to talk to you about a big upcoming matchup with the Chiefs and the Patriots. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you and several other your reporters are able to come together to do Patriots Unfiltered and talk everything Patriots. And you guys recapped a recent win over the Steelers this past week. Bailey Zappe stepped in and did a great job. We're seeing more of him now with, some struggles with Mac Jones. But kind of recap us through that win. It was an awesome week for you guys. And you're out of playoff contention now, but obviously some bright spots to see in that win.
To be honest, it was a pretty shocking win for all of us to come off that game against the Chargers where you were unable to score a touchdown. We were really shocked to see Bailey Zappe go out and score three touchdowns in the first half. We thought that the game plan for him really changed in this short week, which was also surprising given, 3 days to prepare. But, they really let him air it out in the first half, which we really haven't had a chance to see much of Bailey Zappe with since, like you mentioned, Mac Jones has been the starter the rest of the season. So the game plan that they drew up for him on Thursday night, I think, really caught the Steelers by surprise. And we were really, ecstatic to see how he was able to be productive in the first half. Even though the second half was really conservative and more Patriots-like for what the offense has looked like the rest of the season, we were really impressed with the first half, and hopefully they can build on that.
Absolutely. Looking at the record for the Patriots, 3-10, not ideal. I understand that. But, you always have to look deeper sometimes into a team. Records can be very deceiving. First game of the year, a 5-point loss to the Eagles. Then you lose by just a score, 7 to the Dolphins. Got a win over the Jets. Struggled a little bit with the Cowboys and the Saints. But then the Raiders, a 4-point loss. Beat the Bills, the Dolphins, played well against them, kept yourselves in the game. A 3-point loss to the Commanders, a 4-point loss to the Colts, a 3-point loss to the Giants. You're seeing a trend here. Six-point loss to the Chargers. You guys have been in basically every game, and definitely some tough losses, some heartbreaking losses. How is the team up there? You're around the team so much and probably have a lot of really personal relationships around so many of the players and coaches. How is kind of the vibe and the mindset just going through, a tough year like this where you're so close in so many games?
It's definitely been frustrating. I think, the players can see that they're right there, that they're so close to a victory. But, as many of them have said, there are no moral victories in the NFL. So even, coming up short against a great team like the Eagles, they still have work to do. And I think the underlying problem in all of those games, one, has been turnovers, but two, the slow starts. They start off these games where they're down 2 scores with nothing on the board, and they're clawing their way back into it, but ultimately they aren't able to pull it off in the end. So that's why that 3 touchdowns in the first half against the Steelers was so eye-opening for this team, because all season long it's been the same issue of falling behind 2 touchdowns in the first half and unable to get back. So when this team is able to get out there and get points on the board early, they have a better chance of finding victory. So they're hoping that with the rest of this season, they can, continue to build on that and not go back to the same things that were happening throughout the rest of the season.
That's definitely been, a struggle for the Chiefs as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see which team is able to, come out hot out of the gate in this upcoming matchup. For you, there's a lot of controversy right now over the Chiefs, the Kadarius Toney offsides. It called back the touchdown against the Bills that could have won it for the Chiefs. Big deal around Kansas City right now for us. Are you guys paying any attention to that? I mean, it's obviously gone more national than just here in KC, but do you have any thoughts on that, or did you have a chance to see it?
Yeah, so with us playing Thursday night and, you know, with the Chiefs playing at 425, all of us were able to watch the game, and, you know, we all watched it, and it's like regardless of that play, and obviously, you know, everyone wants to highlight, oh, the Chiefs have lost this many games this year, like this is so uncharacteristic of them. We know Patrick Mahomes is still Patrick Mahomes. Despite how many losses they have, despite, you know, they're just coming off a loss to the Bills, the focus is still on the fact that the Patriots are unable to stop those dual threat quarterbacks and that Patrick Mahomes is one of the best out there that are like that. And so when you look at this matchup, it's like, you know, they're coming off a game where back-to-back games, actually the Packers game as well, where, you know, the refs caused them to lose. We can't lose sight of that. And we have to keep focusing on the fact that Patrick Mahomes is such a threat. He has great weapons around him. Travis Kelce is going to be tremendous for the defense to be able to stop. And so I think that, you know, the focus has to be still on the players and not so much on their loss, so to speak. But we definitely feel for them with the last two games and the way the plays have been called.
Yeah, but I hate to say it, Tamara, Patrick Mahomes is angry. He was very visibly frustrated after that. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's a competitor. He's a guy that loves to win, wants to win every chance he gets. So the Patriots are, I think, going to get a very angry Chiefs team.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something that, you know, you guys are kind of ready for, kind of focused on, is definitely a bounce back game, you could say, for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think you definitely would expect a bounce back game from the Chiefs, you know, especially coming off the Packers game too, like I mentioned, just two really frustrating games, you know, where the Chiefs are hoping to come out with a victory. And then also just with so many teams in the AFC, we've been looking at it, it's like, there's so many teams in the hunt right now, and it's so neck and neck compared to the NFC that every single game from here on out is going to be so important. So I know a lot of people look at this one and they're saying this is going to be a sleeper game, but I really think that the Chiefs are going to come out really prepared in this one, and I think the Patriots are going to have their handful. A lot of our injuries are on defense. Christian Gonzalez out, Matthew Judon out. So two top defenders out for the season on injured reserve. And so when you look at this team that's already short-staffed in so many areas on defense, it's going to be important that they play lights out. And so I think it's going to be a handful for the Patriots defense. And if the Patriots offense is unable to keep up with the Chiefs offensively, it's going to be hard to beat them.
You mentioned your defense, maybe a couple key guys out, but mm-hmm. the defense has been awesome this year, really lights out. And it's weird to think about a Patriots team that the offense isn't really, you know, the power of the team. It's obviously been that way for a lot of years, but this year your defense has really kept you guys in a lot of games.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch how they've gelled together. When we've talked to them, you know, about how they're playing so well. And, you know, for I think it was 3 weeks in a row, they were allowing 10 points or less in their opponents and the Patriots were still losing. And they were asked about, like, hey, how do you feel about this? And they were like, you know, it's a pride thing. We pride ourselves, we hold ourselves accountable to keep points off the board. And, you know, obviously we weren't able to win, but this is a team sport. And so we're still believing that our offense will come around and we can play complimentary football. And that's what happened against the Steelers. We started off with a touchdown on offense and the defense got an interception that led to points as well. So I think this team, you know, they still believe in each other. Obviously the defense has been showing up and the offense, you know, they've even said, like, hey, like, I wish we could show up for our defense the way they're showing up for us every single week. We see the work that they're putting in. We wish we could do more for them. And so that game against the Steelers was super important to see that. And I think this Patriots defense is just so prideful in what they do. And they're going to keep showing up no matter what the offense does.
And one thing the Chiefs have yet to really figure out is their receiving group. That's definitely been a struggle this season. The dropped passes have been very frustrating here in Kansas City. The Patriots, though, look like they have that pretty figured out. A very balanced group. Looks like the leader right now, DeMario Douglas, with 410 receiving yards. But you go down the line, you know, next receiver, 406. And then 353, 264, 260, 238, 226, even several guys in the hundreds. I mean, there are so many weapons that whoever's playing quarterback for the Patriots, whether that's Mac Jones or Bailey Zappe, can go to. That has to be kind of a fun thing to see.
So the problem is health. It's been rare that you have all those guys healthy. So, for example, Thursday night, We didn't have DeMario Douglas. We didn't have DeMonte Parker. We didn't have Ramondre Stevenson, running back, and Kayshon Booty. So I think health is a big issue. DeMario Douglas has a lot of concussion issues this season. DeMonte Parker has battled a few injuries as well. So figuring out who is going to be healthy on Sunday afternoon is going to be a big thing to keep an eye on this week for the Patriots offense. But so far, Ezekiel Elliott has done a great job filling that void of not having our first back, Ramondre Stevenson, who is battling an ankle injury right now. And so Juju Smith-Schuster had a great game last week against his former team. And so it's, I feel like every single game it's a different, you know, offensive weapon having to show up because of the health issues and injuries that the offense has been battling this year. So who knows? Maybe they're all going to be healthy on Sunday and ready to go, but you just never know with this team so far this season.
And once again, you know, just pretty rare to see the Patriots struggle. Obviously a dynasty for so long, and then this season hasn't quite been that. But some talk about Bill Belichick. I know he's stayed very focused in his media availability yesterday. You know, he said he's focused on Kansas City. How do you feel like Coach Belichick is, you know, handling obviously a very uncharacteristic season?
Yeah, I feel like he is just staying very in the moment, not looking too far ahead, not looking behind as well. And I think that he's got his eyes on this Chiefs game on Sunday, and as he should. I think that, you know, obviously everyone saw the clips this weekend of him having a great time at the Army-Navy game on College game day and stuff. And now he's standing on business, as the kids would say, and he's getting ready for that Chiefs game on Sunday afternoon. And he knows how talented this team is, and it's going to be a tall task for his team. And he's going to do everything he can to get them ready for it.
The next four opponents for the Patriots, obviously Kansas City, you'll travel to Denver and then to Buffalo and then versus the Jets at home. How do you feel like, you know, even though we, like we said, out of playoff contention, but, you know, how can the Patriots finish off the year strong?
It's going to be a tough test, honestly. I mean, you see, you obviously just saw the Buffalo Bills play the Chiefs. I know they're having a roller coaster of a year. I'm surprised. We're still shocked. One of the wins that the Patriots are able to get this year was against the Bills. That was one of Mac Jones's best performances since he's been in New England. To be able to have a fourth quarter comeback like that was something that we rarely get to see from him. So that was a big win. So to be able to do that again against a great Buffalo team, against Josh Allen, again, dual threat quarterback, that's going to be a tough one for the Patriots. And then when you look at the Jets, this long-standing record that the Patriots have against the Jets, that's going to be up for grabs. I mean, you don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be for the Jets. I feel like it keeps changing every other day. And so there's a lot of unknown there as well. So I think the last couple of games are up for grabs. They're definitely going to be a dogfight. I think, in my opinion, none of them are going to be given. And so it's up to them to figure out how they can find some momentum to hopefully build into next season.
And then the Chiefs' final four games, the Patriots, the Raiders, the Bengals, and the Chargers, each of those teams starting a quarterback that began the year on the bench. I saw that stat, and I was like, that's crazy. I also saw, you know, a complete full list of the NFL and their current starting quarterback, and it was crazy to read. I mean, some of the names, yeah, you're like, who is that guy? So many teams, yeah, having quarterback woes, whether it be from injury or, you know, just struggling to find success with their starter. It's just been a crazy year for the quarterback position.
It definitely has, and it definitely, you know, makes you more appreciative for the emergency quarterback rule, where I feel like, you know, last season there were a lot of teams that were in issues, where I think the Giants were one of them, where, you know, you have Daniel Jones go out, you have your backup quarterback go out, and then you're like, wait, I don't have anybody else. And so I think this year you're seeing more people needing more quarterbacks on their roster, whether it be practice squad as well, because you're like, you never know what's going to happen, whether they're not working up to the bill, whether they're getting injured. It's like, I feel like I've never seen this many starting quarterbacks out. And so it's definitely interesting, especially in the AFC, and you see how neck and neck it is, how important quarterback play is.
Absolutely. And then we've talked a lot of football, but I do want to highlight you because you're doing awesome things. Definitely a great advocate for women in sports. It's been awesome to see your journey. How are you liking your job there with the Patriots? And maybe give us a little bit about your background and just how you got here.
I appreciate you. That was so sweet.
Absolutely.
It's been a grind to get here. And I think, like, the biggest, you know, I think motivator for me is just the next generation of women in sports. I think it was just so tough to get to where I am today, just graduating. I didn't have a job, didn't find a job in sports until a year after graduation. And then just grinding all the way to this point with not much help. I didn't really have a mentor until, like, you know, later on in my career that, like, I really want to do the best that I can to help people early on and just give them more information than I had at their age, because this is a tough business. But I really enjoy every second of it. I think the grind has really helped me, whether it be working behind the scenes, moving around the country. Like, I've moved to, like, 6 different states to get to this point. Wow. I think all of it has paid off in the sense that, like, I am using every single skill and every single lesson that I've learned has benefited me here today. So I think that, you know, without some of those moves across the country, working behind the scenes, doing roles that I really wasn't interested in, if I didn't do all those things, I don't know if I'd be as prepared as I am now. And I talk about this a lot this season, is that, you know, when you're 2-10, 3-10, you really have to use your journalism skills to tell stories.
Absolutely.
It's so easy to tell stories as a journalist when your team is doing well. There's so much to talk about. But how do you communicate with players and coaches when things aren't going well? How do you ask questions to still get a good answer out of them and not make them feel frustrated, you know? And so I think
Absolutely.
That I'm learning more even today. Like, I never stopped learning, but I'm so grateful for the path that got me here, because I don't know how prepared I would be if I didn't grind it out all those years in many different roles. So still learning now, but so grateful for the past and how it's helped me so much today. And I just hope that, like, my journey and my story can help others who are in a similar place and don't see the light at the end of the tunnel and don't feel like they're going to get that first job, just knowing that, like, hey, that was me, I was there too, and just making sure people are aware of that, and knowing that, like, what you see on social media is just a highlight and not necessarily all the things that someone has gone through to get to where they are today.
Absolutely. You do a phenomenal job, and I would agree, you know, definitely you learned a lot from the struggles, for sure, and so, you know, just keep grinding, and I know the Patriots will get back on track as well. What is your favorite part of your job?
My favorite part of the job is getting to know the athletes as, like, people and, like, what brings them joy off the field. You have so many players who are just passionate about other things. We have a guy on our team, Jonathan Jones. He's actually our Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. He is a pilot. Like, he flies planes in
his
free time. Like, he took his time in the off season to get his pilot's license. He's been flying planes. Like, it just, you never would think that of a football player, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just, like, just a random hobby that he has. We have a player on our team who's actually also on injured reserve, Marcus Jones. Like, he likes to do music. And so he has a song out right now that's, like, top 10 in the UK. It's just crazy. So just learning more about them and just what they're interested in is really helpful, because it's, like, at the end of the day, these guys are humans first. And so I know everyone just wants to highlight their stats and, you know, how the team is doing, but getting to know them and their families and things like that, just it just really just makes my, like, heart skip a beat in a weird sense, like, just seeing them as people and just getting their stories out there that many people don't really know about.
Absolutely. I just watched the Tom Brady documentary not too long ago, and I actually didn't know about his mother's battle with cancer and, you know, all that his family was going through kind of during his career. So that was very eye-opening to see. I think I'd be remiss to not bring up Tom Brady here, talking to a Patriots reporter. I guess you weren't with the team when he was playing for the Pats, but have you got a chance? Has he been around, anything like that? Any interactions with Tom?
I haven't had any interactions with him, but the first time I saw him in person was for that Eagles game. So when he came back and it was the Tom Brady game for the first game of the season this year, just seeing how electric this stadium was and how much his presence, like, how much of an impact his presence had just on the whole atmosphere and just everything around the game was incredible to see. Like, he means so much to this team, and he always will. And I think that it was just incredible to see him in person, see the fans react to him. And honestly, it looks like he hasn't skipped a beat at all. And, you know, in June, he'll be celebrated here and officially in the Patriots Hall of Fame. So that's just the beginning of many celebrations for Tom Brady. So I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. I'm really excited for this matchup, and know you are too. So we will see what happens, and you know, may the best team win. I won't call it a rivalry here, but would love for the Chiefs to get a win. Sorry.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
Yep, thank you. That was Tamara Brown, New England Patriots team reporter. Stick with us right here on She's on the Mic on Sports Radio 810. We'll be right back.
You're tuned in to She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman. on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks for joining us here again on Sports Radio 810. You're listening to She's on the Mic. I'm your host, Bethany Bowman. I'm really excited to be joined here by another New England Patriots insider. Joining us now to talk more Chiefs and Patriots in the upcoming matchup is George Bilekci, reporter and host for New England Sports Network. George, great to connect with you again. Our time in the MIAA covering, Missouri Southern and Emporia State is over, but here we are now talking Chiefs-Patriots. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, of course. You know, I was thinking just the other day, like, this Patriots team, it's not just they're terrible for Patriots standards, but for football standards, but they're still not as bad as the 0-11 Missouri Southern Lions team I covered in 2017, which was my first season covering MIAA football. So they give me perspective, and yes, it's good to relink with you from all those years ago of hanging out on MIAA sidelines.
Absolutely. Well, don't let the Lions fans listen into this segment. That was a tough time to watch, but you know, right now for the Patriots, not the ideal season either. They're 3-10, right? 3-10. But you guys got a big win over the Steelers, and Bailey Zappe did great, obviously making a little change here at quarterback. Mac Jones benched several times this season, and finally Zappe now kind of looking like maybe he's the guy moving forward. What is the biggest takeaway from the Steelers' win this past week?
Bailey Zappe at least gave the offense something that's sustainable. You know, I mean, he was making great throws, throwing with velocity, you know, confidence, decision-making, good poise in the pocket. He had good protection up front, but it also is an offense that completely fell off in the second half. They had 13 drives, only two went longer than five plays, and only one of those drives actually ended in a touchdown. So there's positives to pull, but, I mean, this is an offense that's still awful in the receiving corps, has one man now as a running back with Ezekiel Elliott being RB1 with Ramondre Stevenson with a high ankle sprain. And Bailey Zappe, I mean, what if this is basically for him, it's a week-to-week audition if the Patriots want to bring him back as a backup next year. You know, he's a guy that can come in, provide some play, provide a spark. And like I said, just be sustainable to help out a top-five defense is what the Pats have. But he's not a guy that, to me, is week in, week out starting caliber. So it was a great win for the Steelers, as much needed, because this is a locker room of guys full of competitors, full of professionals, full of guys that are trying to win every game, and they just come up short because of the offense. So it was a fun spark to see, but it still is a comeback to reality of, can you do make it 2 weeks in a row? Can you break 24? Because that's what you might need against the Chiefs. And at the same time, I mean, can you just pull any positive? So it was good to see Zappe flourish, but you know, it's something where you pump the brakes and go, it was a bad Steelers team who had an even worse quarterback on the opposite side. So a lot of things still went their way to pull off that win.
For sure. I am curious, you said an awful receiving corps. I guess elaborate a little bit more on that, because if you look, like, there are several guys that have, you know, been able to make some plays this season. Douglas with 410 yards on the year. You know, you go down the line, like, two guys over 400 yards receiving, one with, you know, 353, then you got some in the 200s. I mean, it's been a balanced effort. Do you just feel like there's, I guess, not that go-to guy? Is that what's kind of giving you that perception?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like not punching down on the Chiefs of what transpired for them on Sunday, but the Chiefs are a wide receiver away from being a great offense, and they don't have that key guy who's the number one. Like, Rashee Rice, I love him. That's a wide receiver too right now. And then you have guys in key moments like Kadarius Toney where it shines through that they're inexperienced. Now, if you look at the Patriots, yes, they have Juju Smith-Schuster, who was 10 yards in a cloud of dust for the Chiefs last year, but his knee hasn't seemed right all season long. The last few weeks he stepped up, and it's because you mentioned Demario Douglas. He's in concussion protocol. We'll see him if he's back this Sunday. He's been the most consistent chain mover, but that's still a sixth-round pick out of Liberty. He has his limitations when it comes to IQ. He has his limitations when it comes to ability. And in a way, too, he's kind of regressed throughout the season. And I don't think it's a Demario Douglas thing. I think that's a coaching thing. Then you look at Devontae Parker. He's just been, you know, not the wide receiver one that any team would want. And it's kind of been the same old Devontae Parker that goes back to his Miami Dolphin days. Then you have Tyquan Thornton, the speedster, supposed to, you know, really take the top off of defense. But he just can't catch the ball. He can't get separation. And he's rail thin, which really affects you when you're being tackled and you go down easy against these professional DBs. So they don't have someone who is an elite athlete, separator that can consistently get open and is reliable on the outside. And that holds the whole offense back, especially when you have a bad offensive line and bad quarterback play. You need those good guys, those skilled guys on the outside that you can get the ball out quick to. So when I say they just have a bad receiving group, it's you look at their list, you look at their roster, you look at the depth chart, and these are a bunch of guys that I can't pinpoint any of them and say that would be the second best receiver, let alone maybe third best receiver on the other 31 teams across the NFL. So that's what they're working with. And look at the tight end spot. Hunter Henry's good, serviceable. He's solid. He's a pro, but doesn't run block exceptionally well and, you know, isn't uber athletic like a Travis Kelce or some other guys across the league like a TJ Hockenson or Sam Laporta who could really help out a quarterback. So this is just a undermanned offense, and it all comes back to Bill Belichick, who's been doing the free agency, who's been making the personnel calls. And again, you compile it with Mac Jones, who, you know, has just really been broken at this point as a starter, or Bailey Zappe. I mean, that's a shortcoming. And to me, that's where they're going to run into a wall, because I love Trent McDuffie. I'm a guy that says the Patriots should have taken him when they were at 21 a couple years ago. Instead, they trade back and get Cole Strange a guard, and that's a guy that can match up, and it should be an easy night for him when he goes against these Patriot receivers.
Well, you said you wouldn't feel comfortable like looking at another team's roster and the receivers and feeling like your guys could match up. I don't know. Could you do that with the Chiefs? I mean, I don't know. It's kind of, I feel like, kind of similar receiving corps problems maybe between these two teams.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. You know, and maybe there's, you want, maybe you could see DeMario Douglas with better coaching be the wide receiver two there, and you have Rashee Rice be the one. But I mean, that's like so much to project. And so that's why you look at the current group, the current skill position. And it was, I mean, even look at the New York Giants on Monday night. They have one of the worst receiving rooms in the league, but Isaiah Hodgins and Wandale Robinson, I watch them and I go, those guys would be the best in New England right now. So that's just the way I look at this Patriots team. They've just whiffed on assessing talent on the outside. They gave Juju Smith-Schuster $11 million a year, and he came in with a banged-up knee and never looked right. And at the same time, they let Jakobi Meyers walk over to Las Vegas, who's having a career year with them. So it's just a shortcoming when it comes to that. And even guys like Mike Gesicki, I mean, tall tight end, he was more like a receiver. He's someone I watch to talk about the Chiefs, and I go, if he was with Andy Reid and he's in that offense, him and Patrick Mahomes would find a way to get him the ball, and he would flourish because he'd play opposite of Travis Kelce. So that's my issue, you know. They're good guys. They're professionals. They show up and work hard every day. But when it comes down to it, of just talent and ability and athleticism, the Patriots don't have that in their wide receiver room.
Some controversy over Kadarius Toney and the offsides with the Chiefs. I'm sure you saw it. Everyone saw it. It's the talk of the NFL right now. Any thoughts on that for you, George?
Yeah, I mean, when I watched it live, like, I saw him lining up offsides, and I hate seeing a flag pulled at that point in the game. And that is on the officials. If he's doing it early in the game, say something to Kadarius Toney, because I saw Dan Orlovsky have a breakdown, and second play of the game, Toney was lining up offside. So I understand where Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are coming off pissed off, but because the officials would go, hey, 19 is lined up offside, tell him to step back. If he doesn't, then we'll call a flag, instead of deciding to do it at that key moment. But also, it's day one stuff as a wide receiver. This goes back to Pee Wee days, to high school days. You walk up to line of scrimmage, you tell the line judge on or off, he tells you if you're good, move up, move back. Because even if you're too far back, they could have pulled the flag for too many men in the backfield, illegal formation. So I think it's just something where it gets magnified in that moment. And this is Kadarius Toney. I mean, this is a guy with, what, like 160 receiving yards. And ability-wise, talking about with the pass receivers, that's a guy, if you put hard work combined with his talent, he should be a top three receiver in the league, but he's not. And it just shows how his approach to the game is like that. I think that's, you know, a reflection of the coaching in the wide receiver room. I think it's a reflection on Kadarius Toney. I saw it, and I hate to see a flag in that moment, like I said. I wish I said something to him. But when it's that egregious of a penalty, like, what do you want to do, Kadarius Toney? Be a pro. Stay the line judge. I'm on the line of scrimmage. And also just look down at the line and realize you're in front of the guard in the center. You should not be that far up. So
true.
I hated seeing it happen. It took away an unreal play that had me jump up.
True.
But I don't feel bad because Kadarius Toney, you're paid to be a professional receiver. Be that.
You're right. You're right. You gotta do your homework. And in this case, it was confirming with the ref, and I don't think that he did that. It was a little check, just a little point, but yeah, he did not confirm. I'm with you there. Obviously, like I said, it took back an unreal play. Patrick Mahomes very angry after, you know, all that conspired. It's going to be an angry quarterback and an angry Chiefs team. I talked with Tamara Brown, Patriots team reporter. She talked about, you know, the Patriots sometimes dig themselves a hole, and, you know, slow starts have killed you guys this year. Same goes with the Chiefs, but I would, if I had to guess, probably say that they're going to come out and play a little better from the go, from the get-go. What's kind of your expectations for this game? What are some keys to the matchup for you?
Oh, for sure. I'm with you. I expect the Chiefs to win this one. I do think it'll be tighter. I mean, it's going under, you know, under the radar with what this Patriots defense has done so far this year. But if you look at them since week 8, number 1 rush defense, number 5 in the league when you look at expected points added. And at the same time, this is also a top 5 rushing attack in the NFL, but a bottom 5 passing team. I'm talking about the Patriots here. Combine that, and I think this is what frustrates me when I'm watching the Chiefs this year, is what Brett Veach did midway through his tenure of being the GM for Patrick Mahomes. He invested in the defense because it's let them down at key spots. He invested in the offensive line because it's let them down at key spots. But now the wide receiver room in the offense is just not coming up for them and paying dividends. It's not on Mahomes. It's not on Reed. It's not all on them. It's just a lack of personnel. It's not all on Travis Kelce. So I say all that to say this. I think it'll be an ugly game because that's a very good defense for the Patriots, but that's also a Super Bowl caliber defense for the Chiefs. I give this one to the Chiefs just because they simply have the better offense. They simply have number 15 under center. They simply have Andy Reid, who's still top of his game when it comes to play calling. You know, I've seen the total. It's still at 37, and I was texting my buddy saying, I think 27-10, Chiefs win. But I slowly, and I agree, got talked down. I think this game can end, and we'll see what the weather's looking like in Gillette. But 1 p.m. kickoff, it's going to be cold. The stadium's going to be half empty because Patriots fans are checked out. I wouldn't be surprised 17-10. Chiefs pull out the win, or even you get close to it, maybe 21-13, but it just floats in that range. I don't expect the Pats offense to be able to move the ball that much because they're going to be down to Ezekiel Elliott facing a great defensive line. And when you did ask me about a key matchup in this one, I think it's Chris Jones. I think he's going to dominate the line of scrimmage, him going against Cole Strange, who's a second-year guard, and Sidy Soh, who's a rookie starting at right guard for the Pats. That's a guy that can blow them up right in the middle of the line of scrimmage, that can ruin Ezekiel Elliott's day, and he can also really start to get Bailey Zappe uncomfortable in the pocket. So I think the Chiefs win this one. It's not going to be pretty. They just want to get out with the win. This is a game that's supposed to be Monday night, got flexed to Sunday because that's it, how bad the Pats are playing. But I think it basically comes down to 15 on offense, nothing crazy there, and 95 on defense for the Chiefs. Again, nothing crazy there, but their best players step up. And also I alluded to earlier, Trent McDuffie, that entire secondary, we'll see how healthy they are, but not much of a challenge when it comes to big plays over the top. I think it makes it easier for them to take away the run game underneath.
You mentioned the weather. How is the weather in Foxborough right now?
Cold, rainy, wet. You know, when you get to Gillette, I think the wind is the most important part. If it's 5 mile per hour winds on Sunday, that's all you want if you're the Chiefs. We'll see how healthy their backfield is, but you just want to get in and get out with the wind. But it's nothing like the Midwest. I'll say that right now because I've seen snow in the Midwest. I know how cold and how windy it gets, especially out at Arrowhead. It'll be more mild, just a different type of humidity when you get out this way. But the weather here in New England, definitely a lot more, how should I say this, you know, doable than the weather you get in Arrowhead this time of year.
I'm just hoping that the Chiefs' uniforms, their gear, will get sent to the right place. I remember a few years ago, the Chiefs were getting ready to play the Patriots, and, like, their gear got shipped to New Jersey, I think.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, exactly. Just send it to Foxborough, send it to Providence, send it to Boston, any of those three cities, and they should be in a good spot.
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually on your Twitter right now. A couple of your most recent tweets. Bill Belichick asked if it's his understanding that Robert Kraft will not bring him back as the head coach next season. His answer, I'm getting ready for Kansas City. And then asked if he and Robert Kraft have discussed his future beyond this season. He's getting ready for Kansas City. Good answer, probably the right answer in this situation, but kind of sounding like he might be out.
Yeah, I think that's how it should be. If Bill Belichick wanted to return and only be the head coach, I would be fine with it. But this is a guy that's been their general manager, has their final say on personnel decisions, and he's handed over some of the duties to now their director of personnel, Matt Groh. and the guys before him. But end of the day, the way they've been drafting, he hasn't hit on a first-round pick since 2012. The way they're going about with free agency, you let Jakobi Meyers walk, you bring in Juju Smith-Schuster at $11 million. And the way he's handled just drafting over the years and also just building out his coaching staff, look, Bill Belichick is the greatest head coach of all time. He's brought six Super Bowl trophies to New England. He's made them the greatest dynasty in all sports. He won his first three from 2001 to 2004, then his second three from 2014 to 2019. But after that Super Bowl win to end the 2018-2019 season, they haven't had a playoff win since. The last four seasons, a losing record, one playoff appearance, and they got blown out by the Buffalo Bills. We look at the debacle that's happened with Mac Jones, but as part and due, coming into the draft, we knew they needed a right tackle. He went out and he drafted three interior offensive linemen. He spent the first-round pick, and he just burned it away, as he's been doing these last few years. But he got on Christian Gonzalez. He gets injured. He gets to get the end of Matt Judon. He's been injured. But the depth isn't there for this team. They needed a wide receiver. He didn't address it wisely in the draft either. Amari Douglas is a good story, but that's a sixth-round pick out of Liberty. You need to really get those key guys early on. So, you know, he has a legacy here. He's a future Hall of Famer, first ballot. He's the greatest head coach of all time. But I don't think he can return to the Patriots, because you look at what he's put together the last 4 years, and it's a losing resume. And Robert Kraft, it's going to be a tough decision to make, but they're facing a top three pick. Either go Caleb Williams or Drake May with that. You have to bring in an offensive-minded coach, build the right staff around them, and you need to invest. Quarterback, offensive tackle, wide receiver, those are the top three priorities this offseason. And Bill Belichick has not shown any comparable, you know, resume when it comes to doing that and showing any execution he can pull through with.
I agree. I like it. Okay. Probably most important question of the entire day. I know you Patriots people probably have so much insight up there on this. So is Taylor Swift going to be at Gillette Stadium?
I don't have any insider info on that yet, but I'll say I think her first stadium, sold-out stadium, like football stadium she performed at, might have been Gillette. The three most expensive tickets in Gillette Stadium history were her three shows here this past summer. I assure you that her and Robert Kraft probably have a great relationship, because that is one of her favorite venues, huge fan base. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, she could go down. I believe she has like a beach house in the Providence area, somewhere in Rhode Island. Of course, Boston's a great city this time of year. I don't know. I haven't looked at her tour schedule. I don't even know if she still has any concerts, but I wouldn't be surprised if it lines up. If it was Monday night, I bet she would be here. You know, it'd be more like stars and spotlight on it, make it more fun to spend a Monday night in Boston. But hey, why not? Get into Boston, hang out Saturday night, go out around the city and show up and watch her boyfriend play Travis Kelce. So I expect her to be there. If she's not, I won't have my heart broken, but it'd be cool just to be, I guess, in the stadium with her there and just feel that buzz, because I think that's the only buzz. The only thing that will bring buzz to the game this Sunday, because the Patriots are just that bad.
Yeah. My prediction would be that she will be there. I don't know, though. I try not to keep up too much. I mean, it's their life, you know, and they're inevitably in the spotlight. But I'm a stan for the Taylor and Travis relationship.
Oh, same here all the way. I'm all about the Swifties and the Kelces. I was a hater at the beginning, you know, it getting beat into your head on Monday Night Football on Amazon Prime. But you know what? They genuinely look like they love each other.
They do.
Get along with their families.
They do.
That's what I'm all about. I'm a big family guy. Your significant other should, you know, appreciate and also be loved by your family. So, you know what? For that one, bring me all the Kelce Swifty content. I'm fine with it.
Okay. And lastly, score prediction. Should we do a score prediction? Chiefs, Patriots?
Okay. Score prediction. I'll go wonky because I did give you 17-10 earlier. I will go.
Oh, that's right. That's
17.
Right.
I'll give you on this one. You want to put me to the fire, 17-6, the final, only field goals from the Patriots offense, 17-6.
Ooh. Okay, I think 17 is probably a good number for the Chiefs, like I said. And that's kind of crazy to say, because I'm saying they're going to come in angry, and they're really going to play well, and they're going to score 17 points. That's kind of where we're at right now. But I like it, 17-6. I'll go, let's see. I'll give Bailey Zappi a little more credit. I'm going to say 17-10.
17-10,
Chiefs.
All right,
yeah, 17-10.
And that means the Patriots covered, too. I think they're at, like, 9.5 right now. Interesting. I like it, though. I like it.
Dang. Okay. That would be a win. A moral victory, you could say. All right. Well, thanks, George. I appreciate it. And best of luck covering the game. It's going to be cold. Bundle up, but enjoy the Chiefs and enjoy the Swifties. They'll be there, probably.
Yeah, I'll be wearing red. Not for the Chiefs. I'll be wearing red for Taylor Swift. We'll see.
Thank you. See ya. That was New England Sports Network host and reporter George Belecki helping us get ready for the New England Patriots and Kansas City Chiefs matchup happening this Sunday. Stick with us right here on She's on the Mic Sports Radio 810. We're going to talk Royals with Joel Goldberg coming up next.
You're tuned in to She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you for joining us here again on Sports Radio 810. This is She's on the Mic with Bethany Bowman. And after all the Chiefs talk of the upcoming matchup with the New England Patriots, I thought we'd switch gears just a little bit here. Excited to be joined here now by Royals broadcaster Joel Goldberg. Joel, thank you so much for joining us. A lot going on in the Royals world. Obviously not baseball season yet. I'm ready for it, but we do have some excitement going on right now.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Bethany. And yeah, I think this time of year, you go through these stretches where it could be really quiet, and then suddenly it gets busy. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's a bunch. This ended up being the week where it was a bunch. I think everybody tends to sort of brace and be ready for all the big news coming out of the winter meetings. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. It feels to me like this year, maybe the dust all sort of settled after the winter meetings and after Ohtani signed. Not that Ohtani signing had anything to do with the Royals moves that they just made, but I feel like everybody was sort of waiting on that, and a lot of dominoes start to fall. And there's probably a lot of feeling out going on at the winter meetings too. And so here we are a little over a week or so later, and the Royals have made a nice splash over the last couple of days.
Absolutely. Well, the Royals didn't get Shohei Ohtani. I was pretty disappointed on that. But we got some nice additions. Seth Lugo, Chris Stratton, Will Smith, some other offseason acquisitions, Kyle Wright, Nick Anderson. Looking like they're kind of focusing on the pitching right now.
Yeah, and I think they have to. I mean, it starts there. That's not to say that they don't need some work on the hitting side, too, because they do, and I think that they will at some point. But, I think we went into the offseason knowing that they needed at least one, if not two, starting pitchers, that they needed more bullpen arms, and they need a bat somewhere, maybe a corner outfield bat. So if you look at it now, they've addressed some of that. You suddenly have some nice pieces in the bullpen. You go back to Nick Martinez. Kyle Wright should pay dividends in 2025. And so, when you go into next year and you start wondering about rotation, wherever it stands after this year or this upcoming year, you already know that you're adding a piece to it. So, if you really look at the Seth Lugo signing, they just added two starting pitchers for their rotation in 2025. So you get Lugo this year and the next 2 years. You add in Kyle Wright the next year. So I think that they got someone that based on what he's done in recent years and proven that he could start in San Diego, that you've got a nice, reliable veteran that you're adding to this rotation. And I think the bullpen piece is a big one too, because what I think the theme with all of these guys is that you're getting proven veterans that are in their prime. You could argue that Lugo's a little bit older where he's at, but he doesn't have as many innings in terms of wear and tear and really proved himself in that role last year. So I think it's good. I mean, I think the theme is reliable veterans. And I think the other theme to it, too, is that with so much young talent and waiting on so much of that young talent, they can't wait anymore. And so if some of these other young and up-and-coming guys figure it out next year, great. But if they don't, you can't be left empty-handed.
Absolutely. And you talked about Lugo kind of, showing that he can start again, obviously, with the Padres. He came up as a starter with the Mets, and then he spent a lot of time relieving for them. What's kind of that dynamic like as far as starting or being a bullpen guy? Do you see him as more of a starter? And how can that kind of, change for guys over the years or with different clubs?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because a lot of times you will see failed starters go to the bullpen. It's usually not the other way around. I mean, if you look at, there are a million examples of this, but the Luke Hochevers of the world and the Wade Davis, guys that Jeff Montgomery, for that matter, who became one of the great relievers of his time was a starter back in the day. And in the case of Lugo, you know, I didn't follow his career as much with the Mets, but I know the one thing that you often heard about him is that, you know, can he get the chance to start? Can he get the chance to start? And he did last year, and he proved himself. So I think that, you know, the Royals need something like that. They need a guy like that. His name was certainly one that we heard mentioned, and I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be different for every single guy. I think if he didn't have the experience of starting, if it was more of a let's see if he can do this, I think that there's a bit more of a concern. But to have proven himself the way he did last year, I think will be a really good thing for the Royals.
A guy that might be bringing some good mojo to Kansas City, Will Smith. He's been a part of the last three World Series championships.
Yeah, and that, along with the fact that the Royals have history with him. And I've known Will a long time. He's always been a high-character, good guy, but when he was here the first time around, he was a rookie. He was just breaking in. You could tell back then that he was a guy that got it, that was of high character, that would be a good teammate. And then he's gone out and proven himself. I always say with guys that bounce from team to team, it's one of two things. It's either, one, they're bouncing from team to team because they wear out their welcome, but somebody's going to take a chance on them because they've got good stuff. They're going to make you better if you could live with it. And then they usually wear out their welcome and they move on. Or it's just someone that people want them as a part of their organization, that they're proven and that they're always going to be in demand because they make their teams and their teammates better. And that's Will Smith. I mean, he's at an age right now where you're unless it's an absolute guaranteed closer, and he could close, but he could also be kind of anything you want. He could be a bullpen by committee. He could be that matchup lefty. There's not as much of a, you know, matchup lefty thing anymore with the three batter minimum, but he's a guy you could put anywhere and rely on him. And the fact that he has been on three straight championships, so we want to make that out like he's the good luck charm or something like that. I think we can all agree that the Royals probably aren't poised to compete for a world championship yet, not next year. Mm-hmm. But the common thread is that championship teams wanted him. And so then getting back to my original point, you asked the question, is it someone that someone lives with because he's that good and he wears out his welcome, or no? And I could just say from all of my experience with him, talked to him a bit this past season when the Royals played the Rangers too, he's a great teammate. He's a great guy. And I think the difference between him now from when I saw him and when we saw him here in Kansas City was he's got a lifetime of experience now. And so to be able to add a piece like that to the bullpen will be very stabilizing. He will be a mentor for some of these younger pitchers. And I think I like the fact that he's not the only veteran player or pitcher that they're bringing in here. So you suddenly add in a few guys with a lot of experience between him and Chris Stratton and Nick Martinez, and you end up replacing guys like a Colin Snyder, pitchers like that, who all did a nice job up and down here, kind of the perils, the ups and downs of being a young pitcher. But again, back to that other point, that they can't keep waiting on guys to all figure it out at the same time. And so they've replaced some guys that might make it, that might figure it out at some point. Colin Snyder did some really nice things, got mm-hmm. Great two-seamer, and could really get those ground outs, but he was up and down and up and down, and now you're replacing it with a lot of stability. I love the Will Smith signing. And the last piece to it, Bethany, is that we'll see. I mean, maybe he's some version of Aroldis Chapman this year. And, you know, I think they need to look at all these type of players that they're bringing in and say, hey, not only are they going to make us better for the season or however long they're here, but they may turn into another Cole Reagans or someone like that. And the Royals have to be able to be transactional and capitalize on these guys and then potentially try to turn them into something else.
That's a great point. And I do like the veteran aspect that we're getting with a lot of these signings. We did see with the Rule 5, the Royals dealt Dylan Coleman, and I think they got a complex guy for him from the Astros. So obviously not somebody they're planning on utilizing right away. Do you think, you know, kind of Dylan Coleman, heck of a fastball, is that a thing where, you know, they just, like I said, you kind of want some older guys, maybe just get a little more veteran aspect in there?
I think that's it. I'll compare him not with the stuff, different types of pitchers, but I'll compare him to a Colin Snyder. Is guys that you can see that they have stuff. Dylan's on a different level. I mean, Dylan very much looks the part in terms of the fastball that he throws, the physical stature that he has. He is a big, imposing figure that looks every bit the part of a closer. But, you know, he spent a lot of time back in the minors again. I think started the year in the minors, came back, and then struggled. They've got to get guys that are throwing strikes. And, you know, if and when someone like a Dylan Coleman can consistently throw strikes, I think he's got the chance to be an elite-level reliever in this league. But I don't think that they could keep waiting on half of their pitching roster to get this all figured out, because they're not going to be in a lot of games, as we've seen. And so whether that be, you know, Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubich coming back from Tommy John, even Brady Singer, I don't think at this point that you can live with a roster with that many guys that all have upside but haven't figured it out yet. And so in the case of Dylan Coleman, you saw what he could be, but he wasn't there yet. And so you start looking at your roster and saying, okay, how can we upgrade and how can we get some certainty? And so that's what they've done. Is there a chance that Dylan Coleman ends up down the road being even more valuable than a Will Smith or whoever it is? Sure. But what we know about Will Smith right now, and I think you could probably say the same thing for Chris Stratton and Nick Martinez, is that they've shown they can do this. You know, if healthy, and when I say if healthy, I say that about everyone, not because of any injury past. There are no guarantees on anyone. But if you're going to roll the dice and you need some consistency and you need to be able to stabilize things, that's why you go with veterans. And, you know, the other piece, too, I've seen a few people saying, well, now suddenly we're all Texas Rangers, and the way they used to say it with the Atlanta Braves. You pull from organizations that you trust. And so, you know, I don't know that J.J. Piccolo is necessarily on the phone every day with Dayton Moore. I don't know how much they talk, but between Dayton Moore and Chris Young, whether you're checking with them or not, you know the type of character, the type of people that they're going after, the same way that you did with Atlanta. So part of doing your homework is making sure that, am I bringing in the right type of people that are going to fit what we're doing? And so I think they have to feel really good about the type of people that they're bringing in, and then the certainty in terms of what that performance should be.
And some other players, some position players, you know, more specifically, seem to be getting behind what the Royals are doing. I saw Bobby Witt Jr. tweeting out, you know, a brick emoji, which seems to allude to building a foundation. And, you know, seems like just right now things looking a little up for the Royals.
Yeah, I'm glad that you could help translate a little bit, because you're younger than me, Bethany. And we do live in a world now where you have to translate emojis and all of that. But all joking aside on that one, the players, they pay attention to all of it. You know, they do. And you know, there's a lot of talk about Bobby Witt Jr. and are they going to sign him to a long-term deal? Is he interested? Is he not interested? If Bobby Witt Jr. is tweeting out, building a foundation, and likes what he's seeing, that helps. I mean, I really believe that sometime this offseason they will have a deal with him. Nobody's told me that. I think that they're – now, how long that deal is, what it costs, I don't know. But I think that – you know, the more a Bobby Witt Jr. sees some of those pieces coming into place, the more that he's going to want to be a part of this. And we know he's going to be a part of it the next 4 years, but can they make it longer than that? I don't think you're going to see them sign him to 10 or 12 years, because I think, unless they're major outs in it, I think that he'll want to test the free agent market at some point. But can they extend that beyond the 4 years? Can they get, you know, guarantee him some money beyond his arbitration years? Can they give him some certainty? Can they give themselves some certainty? So, you know, I think, and not just Bobby, I think that some of the foundational pieces of this team, just like the fans for that matter, need to believe that they're moving in the right direction. And I think that what we've seen, certainly over the last couple of days and beyond, are steps to that, to solidifying things and really building. I think the bricks are good. I mean, building a foundation for what's lying ahead.
For sure. And we're far away from this, but obviously new stadium renderings, talk of that, and I have no idea where that's at or if anybody knows where that's at, actually, for that matter. But, you know, thank you so much for all your insight. Anything else new going on around the Royals world you can tell us about?
No, I think, you know, we'll see more coming up with stadium. I really believe that it's only a matter of time. That'll get done. I think ultimately they'll end up downtown, but, you know, no guarantees, obviously, and we're dealing with politics and we're dealing with a lot more than I think what is in our normal worlds, Bethany, in terms of just talking about sports. But I think ultimately that'll happen. I think it'll be a great thing. I think a little something to look forward to now coming up before spring training in the next couple of months, or maybe sooner, who knows, is keep an eye on Bobby Witt Jr. with that contract, obviously. And I think keep an eye. I mean, if they need one more starter and maybe one more position player, I don't know that they're going to be able to, like an impact position player, I don't know that they'll be able to do that through free agency unless they can spend more than what they said they were going to spend. Look for some kind of trade at some point. I don't know who, but I think if they want to go get another Seth Lugo type of arm, or if they want to go get a power bat for corner outfield, see if they trade one of these younger guys and can turn that into something else. You know, younger pitcher, younger position player that maybe you find somebody that has a little bit more experience that could also provide some leadership. I don't know what that's going to be, but I sort of feel like that'll happen.
As long as they don't trade Salvador Perez, that is fine.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's say this right now, too. I think there are a lot of people that would be okay with that, and there are a lot of people more so that will be devastated by it.
I am one of those.
I am too, and I tend to try to keep the emotion out of it, and, you know, it makes me less of a fan and more just this is the business. That's what happens when you've been in a long time. But, you know, provided Salvi's back this year, and I expect that he will be, meaning provided he's not traded. This will mark, for me personally, I don't know that anybody really cares about this, this will be my 14th season with him, and the longest I've ever covered a player is Salvi for 13. I mean, that includes some injuries in there, but Salvi for 13 and Alex Gordon. So, you know, I've spent more time with this guy than basically anybody in my career. Can't envision spending it without him. If that happens, that's fine. I could tell you this much, that while there's been all that talk, and there was last year, about he'd be willing to be moved, that he has veto power and all that, I can tell you with certainty that he doesn't want to go anywhere. And, you know, it's a tricky one because can you make your team better? Maybe. But, you know, Salvi's nowhere near being done with his career. But, you know, he's on the older end versus the younger end. And so, you know, does he have more value somewhere else than he does here? I'm not so sure. If he has greater value to another team, and that could be a ticket to making your team better for years, sure. But this isn't trading Zach Greinke, you know, 11, 12 years ago, where he's just entering his prime. This is a guy that may be past his prime or towards the end of his prime. And so I think with Salvi, I fully expect him to be here. I think you'll see more Freddie Freeman behind the plate. I think that you'll just see him catching less and more time DHing and a little bit of time at first base, which I know he really enjoyed this year. I still think you'll see his bat in the lineup, you know, 6 days a week. And I just think you'll see him less time behind the plate. He'll still continue to be the leader. He'll still continue to be one of the faces, really the face of this franchise. I'd be surprised, nothing's ever a given, but I'd be surprised if he was moved. I know he loves it here in Kansas City. You know, I've said to him many times before that his three homes of Venezuela, Miami, and Kansas City, and he always says to me that the correct order is Venezuela, Kansas City, Miami. This is really his second home.
Yeah, and I'm also glad you brought up Alex Gordon there in that answer, because he's going into the College Baseball Hall of Fame in February right here in Overland Park.
Which is awesome. I mean, we're talking about one of the just greatest Royals of all time, such a beloved figure. And I think it's cool, too. I mean, you know, a lot of those guys, I think Salvi included, used to call him, I think, Alexander the Greatest is what they would call him. I mean, it's so interesting to look at Alex and Salvi, because two totally different type of guys, two totally different type of leaders. You've got the one guy that's loud and boisterous and always joking around. You got the other guy in Alex Gordon that's much more stoic. By the way, just as much a prankster and able to joke as Salvi. You just don't see it. He keeps it on the inside. It's quiet, but very sneaky, funny, and a dry sense of humor. But two guys that want to be in there, or when Alex was playing, wanted to be in there every single moment. Two guys that people follow. Gordo more in the sense of leading by example, but really both guys pretty unbelievable.
Absolutely. Well, Joel, thank you so much. I really appreciate it and hope to see you soon. I don't know if that will be at spring training, if it'll be on the sidelines of a KU football game. Could be anywhere. I'm interested to see where it might be. But thank you again so much.
Thanks, Bethany. Great talking to you.
That's it tonight for She's on the Mic on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much to Patriots George Bilecki, Tamara Brown joining us tonight, as well as Royals broadcaster Joel Goldberg. I'm going to sign off here and hand it off next to Sterling Holmes.